We are broadcasting.
Okay, welcome everyone. I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order, and we will start by calling the roll. So please call the roll.
Senator Finley.
Senator Finley, present by video.
Senator Riley.
Present by video.
Senator Wagner.
Present by video.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Senator Boquist, present by telephone.
Madam Chair Burdick.
Present by video. Okay, we're all here, so we will start by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 43.
Okay, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yes, Senate Bill 43 is a bill related to two programs having to do with the Oregon Film and Video Office, and it's a sunset extension bill for these two programs. So the first is the Greenlight Oregon Labor Rebate Program. So that sunset's been extended from January 1st, 2024 to January 1st, 2030. And the second has to do with the tax credit for certified film production development contributions. So this is one of Oregon's auction tax credits that's available. And the sunset has been extended in this case from January 1st, 2024 to January 1st, 2030 as well.
All right, let me get my witness list here. this remote is a little confusing at times. So what did I do with that? Okay, we will start out with Tim Williams from the Oregon Film Office.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. I do have some slides, if we can get those up.
Our technical wizards will take care of that. Welcome, the slides are up.
No, Haley, that's not the right one. I want to do the, that's the economic development report. It's the other one, my testimony, forgive me.
Madam Chair, could Chris tell us the name of the exhibit?
The name of the exhibit in meeting materials is OFVO, Oregon Film and Video Office, 2021 presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Got it open. Thanks.
Thank you.
Alternatively, I could just go and I could tell you when to switch slides and everybody could look at it themselves. I'm happy. Oh, here we go.
There we go.
Not yet.
Oh, here we go.
Great. That's it. That's the first slide. Thank you very much. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, members of the committee, my name is Tim Williams, and I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Film, the State Film and Media Economic Development Office. SB 43 would extend the sunset dates for both of our main media incentive programs by a further 6 years. This out-of-cycle request for extension is being made in order to preserve a multi-year program that is utilized to retain and attract projects whose production timelines span multiple years. If you could go to the next slide. Our media incentive programs yield jobs, spending, economic recovery, and knock-on effects to other industries, even though these same programs are in the bottom third of the other 32 states that have these similar incentive programs. And that's because people want to work here. We have a program that has grown over time and therefore remains grounded and sustainable, with programs focused solely on locally produced projects and regional production. And we can continue that growth with a multi-year program that will be especially valuable now because of the recovery potential it has both economically across connected industries and in terms of marketing the state at a time when no other industry is doing that. Next slide, please. I've placed an updated economic development report from the Northwest Economic Research Center at PSU into OLIS. It's posted in the meeting materials. This report builds on the data collected in our last report. Overall, the report shows a high percentage of spending on Oregon-based labor, in addition to goods and services bought or rented from Oregon-based companies. Next slide, please. In addition, the NERC report also shows strong overall economic output for the program spanning several years. On a specific note, you'll see a big drop-off between 2017 and 2018, and this was due to three long-term series coming to an end in the same year, Grimm, Portlandia, and The Librarians. Altogether, these three series shot 18 seasons in Oregon. Recovering from this single-year event has been at the forefront of our efforts, and we've since been able to work with new series like Shrill, Trinkets, and The Birch. Next slide. After shutting down completely in March due to the pandemic, the film and media industry began to work on a comprehensive plan to return to work in a safe and conscientious manner. With the help and direct input from OMPA, local unions, guilds, small businesses, and the local workforce, a set of health and safety protocols were developed in May and put into effect starting in June. The projects that have returned to production in the interim have created jobs, spending, and knock-on support for related industries, including the badly hit hospitality industry. In the last two quarters of 2020, tracked production spending returned to the levels that we tracked in the last two quarters of 2019, before the pandemic. Next slide. In fact, this industry's unique power to economically stimulate other related industries because of its interconnection was uniquely highlighted in the work that was being produced in post-pandemic period. This included hotel room nights being paid for, large venues not otherwise being utilized, being converted into offices and stage spaces, and production spending moving to various parts of the state. By way of example, the Bravo series Top Chef shot six of its 14 episodes in locations outside of Portland and utilized more than 7,000 room nights in various locations during its production schedule last fall. Next slide. Our project retention and recruitment work is aided by these incentive programs. It focuses on both short-term and long-term productions, but it is the multi-year projects that create the most sustaining economic activity and spending at local businesses. It is for this reason that we are seeking to extend the sunset dates on both programs out of cycle in order to provide a stable and long-term program that is attractive to producers and creators of multi-year television series, feature animation projects, and interactive game creation. TV series are routinely looking for a five-year program because they want to ensure that a successful series can stay in the chosen location for at least a five-year run. This has been something that has worked well for Oregon on past series like Grimm, Portlandia, Leverage, The Librarians, and Shrill. Next slide, please. In 2017, we instituted a regional program that was aimed at encouraging film and media production in all parts of the state. Here's a map that outlines just the local accommodation spending that we have tracked through various production finding locations throughout Oregon. These numbers do not include the spending that is being done with local vendors like food, gas, taxis, restaurants, and dry cleaning. In just the past 2 to 3 months, we have seen production work in Hood River, the North Coast, as well as an upcoming feature film project basing itself in Coos and Curry counties. Next slide. I also wanted to point out the longer term benefits of retaining and attracting these types of projects here in Oregon. The first step is the direct spending with local businesses and jobs for local crews and talent. But beyond that, there's also the notoriety and marketing potential for these projects bringing to the state. At the moment, this industry is creating content that sells Oregon internationally on a weekly basis. Visitors still flock to locations in Astoria, Brownsville every year to celebrate films like The Goonies and Stand By Me. Capitalizing on this, we have created the Oregon Film Trail with locations around the state that encourages film tourism to iconic filming locations in places like Athena, Cottage Grove, Burns, and Ashland. To our knowledge, this is the first of its kind in the U.S., and there are now more than 20 stops on the trail with another 10 more signs set to be installed over the coming months. Next slide, please. I also want to take a moment and celebrate a few successful premieres that we had this past year. In a year with a great deal of uncertainty around film distribution and audiences, two Oregon-made films were number one at the U.S. box office last summer, while a third film is garnering a great deal of awards attention. The Rental, shot in Bandon, and Phoenix, Oregon, shot in Klamath Falls, and both held the top position at the box office in the summer of 2020, with Phoenix making a pivot after the wildfires devastated their local and namesake community to donate ticket sales directly to the fire recovery. In addition, the Elkton shot First Cow has received numerous award nominations from critics and organizations alike, and well-deserved recognition for the title character, the cow, being sourced and trained by talented animals, a local animal training located just outside of Corvallis, who incidentally also trained another titular animal for a critically acclaimed film, the horse called Lean on Pete, for the feature by the same name shot in Burns. Next slide. These tax credits have been working well since they were implemented. They have gradually increased, which has led to a growing and permanent industry, but Oregon is in competition with at least 30 other states and all provinces of Canada to attract and retain production work on all levels: film, television, animation, commercials, interactive, branded content, and more. There's a strong ecosystem of creators and small businesses that rely on this industry for their own growth. Having a multi-year program, something that is only achievable through a tax credit system, is also something that is important to producers and studios looking to base multi-year projects here in Oregon, most particularly television series and animated features, two distinct areas our state has done well in over the last few years. In addition, our state has the advantage of mostly playing Oregon for Oregon on screen, which means Oregon is marketed to a global audience on a regular basis. Removing or scaling down this program would immediately reduce Oregon's competitiveness in this effort and result in the loss of projects, production spending, and jobs. In fact, because of our incentive programs here in Oregon, Oregon was immediately able to compete for locally and U.S.-based production work looking to safely resume this past summer and fall. The out-of-cycle sunset extension for these programs contained in SB 43 will ensure that all of this production retention recruitment work can continue into the future with multi-year projects. I thank you very much, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I appreciate that presentation. I've worked on this tax credit program for years in my prior iteration as chair of this committee. And it's one of those, it always amazed me how much benefit we got for such a relatively low expenditure. And it finally occurred to me that the green eye shade people in the industry just need to see something on that line. They need to see something that they can count on that incentive line. And I think the way this program has been managed, and you've had an enormous amount to do with that, has really provided a lot of bang for the buck. Senator Finley, you have a question.
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering, Mr. Williams, do we know if these tax credit or credit certifications are traded on a secondary market?
Chair Burdick, Senator Finley, no, they are not. They can only be used by the people who purchased them initially.
Okay. And as a follow-up, Madam Chair?
Please follow up.
Thank you. I know that last year, Mr. Williams, there were some problems on selling that tax credits for the revenue you thought you were going to gain. I think they undersold somewhat. I never heard how that rectified or whether that did, or at what level did you end up?
Chair Burdick and Senator Finley, it's actually gone fairly well in the last 2 years. The first year we did have a bit of a drop off, and we did a second auction with the help of the Department of Revenue, and we did eventually sell out. This year we sold out on the first auction. So I would say that the interest in the auction is not as strong as it was 3 years ago when there was a different IRS component to it, but it definitely has recovered with some of the small changes we've made over the last couple of years in order to support it.
Thank you.
Senator Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I've been, as you, working on this for quite a while, and as most people know, I don't really like tax credits, but this is one that I actually like. Tim's done such a great job getting the films here and especially some of the non-action movies, and it's been really good for Oregon, and I think we need to appreciate what has actually happened here and continue this credit. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Riley. And Senator Finley, to your comment, there will be no transferable tax credits except unless you guys completely have a revolution. And it doesn't look like you're going to. the advantage of the tax credits structured the way they are is all of the benefit goes to the person to whom it's intended. And so all of the money that's raised through this tax credit goes exactly where it's supposed to go. And that's one of the strong points of this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions or comments from the committee? Thank you. Okay, our next witness is John Powell. John, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, Senator Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Powell, representing the Motion Picture Association, and testifying today in support of Senate Bill 43, which, as you've heard, provides a limited incentive for film production projects in our state. I've been asked, first off, to convey from the industry that there is great interest and enthusiasm for filming in Oregon. They've had a great experience in the past and are looking to continue that in the future. Incentive programs such as this one you are considering today are certainly an important factor that film producers analyze when deciding where to film their projects. As Tim mentioned, many other states have incentive programs that are more generous than what Oregon offers, such as New Mexico, which just increased theirs to $110 million annually, and New Jersey, who had eliminated theirs, brought it back and just last year increased it to $100 million annually. So we think it's very important to at least maintain this program to be able to compete for future projects. Also, as Mr. Williams mentioned, I do have some statistics from some of the productions that filmed here in the recent past that I think are illustrative for the committee to hear. Many of you will remember NBC's Grimm series that filmed in Oregon for 6 years. It employed 962 full-time equivalent positions with wages paid over that period of $297 million. In addition, that project purchased goods and services from over 400 Oregon businesses during that time period to the tune of $431 million. Another example was the Warner Brothers production of the show Shrill for Hulu that filmed in Oregon for 3 years. Just in the last year of that filming, wages were paid in the neighborhood of $7.5 million and $3.5 million in purchases of goods and services from Oregon businesses. So I illustrate those examples to show that Oregon benefits economically and from a tax revenue perspective by orders of magnitude over any costs related to the incentive program. So to conclude, the Motion Picture Association urges the committee to support extending this modest incentive program. And I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any. Thank you.
Senator Findley, your hand is still up. Do you have a question? Okay, your hand is now down. Are there other questions from the committee? Thank you. Thank you, John. Okay, next we have a panel, Devin Fabantau, Annie Lundgren, and Courtney Williams. And if you could all three come in and give your name before anyone starts their testimony so that we see all your pictures. And then one by one, you can testify and give your name for the record at that time.
Chair Burdick, Senators, my name is Annie Lundgren.
Okay.
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, my name is Devin Fafantel.
Okay.
Courtney? Chair Burdick and members of the committee, my name is Courtney Williams.
Okay. Who wants to go first? Have you decided how you want to structure that?
This is Courtney Williams. I'm happy to go first.
Okay, proceed.
Okay, hello and thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. My name is Courtney Williams. I'm a first assistant director and an independent producer in Ashland, Oregon in Jackson County. And I'm testifying in support of Senate Bill 43. I trained in the film industry in New York City and moved to Ashland 7 years ago. I and my colleagues here in Southern Oregon make our livings on independent feature films and commercials, and especially during the pandemic, making digital content for online media. I'm now working on my second project with the Oregon Shakespeare Festival to help OSF develop their online offerings, which is key to the business of the theater at this time. The tax incentives and labor rebate programs, as everyone has said, attracts production to Oregon. And we're competing with Georgia and other states that have superlative offerings. But Oregon is competitive, and we need to keep growing what we have. Ashland and Portland were both announced this week in Movie Maker Magazine, which is a national publication, as best places to live and work as a filmmaker. So we're definitely in the game, and I'm looking that we continue to grow that momentum. And as has been said, the benefit of extensions is that the multi-year projects, like TV shows, for example, need to be able to film for here for numerous years, for several seasons, and not have production benefits pulled out from under them. They will not come here if that's a threat. And they put down infrastructure and then spend millions of dollars employing film professionals and people in other ancillary industries, and especially industries that have been hit hardest by the pandemic. So for us in Southern Oregon, when large productions are in state, the smaller productions like the ones I work on benefit quite a lot by cheaper equipment rentals, loans, mentorship, and also by more work, because we get called to come up to Portland when all the other crew are busy. So all boats rise with the tide. I'm also an adjunct professor at Southern Oregon University in the digital cinema department. And by attracting and keeping film business here in Oregon, we can also keep our graduates here in Oregon. I have a number of graduate students who have moved up to Portland and have been working in the industry. But if we don't have an industry here, I would be the first person to tell my students to move to Atlanta or Vancouver or someplace where they can make a living. But we have the chance to maintain and grow the momentum that we have. So I urge you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee, to please support Senate Bill 43 to extend Oregon's tax incentives and labor rebate programs. I think we all benefit, our students benefit, and people, as Tim said, people want to film here, and students want to be here as well. They're excited to make movies here in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll take the other two panelists and then open it up for questions. So, Annie, did you want to go next?
Yes, thank you, Chair Burdick. My name is Annie Lundgren. I'm a film producer in Ashland, Oregon, and I'm testifying today in support of Senate Bill 43. Our production company, Joma Films, has made four feature films in Southern Oregon, including last year's theatrical release, Phoenix, Oregon. Each of our four films has utilized Oregon's production incentives, and our last film was able to use the new regional incentive for productions outside of the Portland metro area, so thank you for that. In addition to the productions that we initiate, our team also works on multiple projects every year brought in by companies and financiers from out of state. Many, if not most, of these also use the incentives. When a production comes to town, tens of thousands, often hundreds of thousands, are spent in the communities in just a few weeks. The incentives are critical to the livelihood of production workers in the state. Without them, many companies would take their productions elsewhere. Indeed, when my husband and I chose to move to Southern Oregon 10 years ago, we had just finished our first feature film, and we had considered filming in New Mexico and other states, but because Oregon had the incentives, it became an option to film here. And Chair Burdick, you touched on this earlier. Production incentives are practically a requirement. They are an expected line item on a producer's budget. And therefore, they're a critical consideration when we are deciding in which state to make a film. Our company is now actively pursuing a television show to be filmed in Southern Oregon, and it will be either one we produce or that we bring in from out of state. If we have the confidence that the incentives will extend past 2024, this will make it an easier sale to our funders and our out-of-state partners. Thank you for supporting and considering a yes vote on SB 43.
Thank you. Devin, you're next.
Hi, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. I am testifying today on behalf of Senate Bill 43. My name is Devin Feifantau, residing in Multnomah County, and I am an indie film director and producer, and I work primarily in narrative and documentary film, but I also do corporate commercial work for my film production company, No Sunrise Wasted. As a gay Asian American immigrant filmmaker, I've been blessed with the opportunity to be working in film for the last 5 years, completing film school as a mid-career transition student. Behind me, you'll see a poster of my first feature film, Who's on Top, narrated by George Takei. The film is near and dear to my heart. It tells the story of four members of the LGBTQ community, and the movie showcases the emotional and psychological obstacles that they've had to overcome. And as in terms of the title, how that comes in is we follow them as they train and eventually climb Mount Hood. The film took over 3 years to complete. So as you can see, filmmaking takes a lot of time, and hence the request to approve Senate Bill 43 is really important for us. And as part of that film, I was able to hire a mix of crew and post-production vendors in order to complete the film. And thanks to LOPIF and ROPIF, that was instrumental in allowing me to do that. I'm currently working on my second feature film, which is about three times the budget of the documentary. So as I continue in the industry, I'm really trying to level up and increase my production budgets. And I didn't want to feel left out, so I too have a TV show in my production pipeline. And again, the goal is to be able to rely on the thoughtful tax credits that Senate Bill 43 will allow for us to continue to thrive in this amazing industry. So lastly, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions from the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Boquist.
Yes, please, Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And any of the panel can jump in here because I'm actually looking for their insights and not Tim's. This particular tax credit is capped in the sales that are auctioned at $14 million. And obviously with COVID lockdown, there's going to be some return or a broader demand in the media industry for production in the future. And given there are at least 75 pieces of written testimony in the record right now, which is unusual for a revenue committee bill, by the way, do any of the three of you see an expansion possibility for the market, even if it was small, say in this program from, you know, a couple million dollars more, but do you think there's room for expansion as we go forward?
We're getting some very strange audio.
Is my audio any better?
Yeah, we were just getting some very strange sound effects. It sounded like a 45-year tape played at 78, if any of you are old enough to know that reference.
It sounds like it's in fast motion. I can't necessarily speak to the wider industry. I know that there hasn't been as much production, so I think that we will all be getting into production in a fast and furious way once the pandemic eases up. I do know that we are always nervous every time we put our application in for the incentives that there will be enough left. So just the fact that they have run out, and I mean, Tim could speak to when they run out. I'm really just speaking to my experience as requesting the incentives, that I'm always nervous that there won't be enough left.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Senator Boquist?
Yes, and I'm curious if anybody else that testifies of what their observation is of the future. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Devin, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I'll jump in. I was going to say that that's always top of mind, and Tim is great in terms of keeping an open dialogue and ensuring that we check in with him. To ensure that there is enough money. There's a pretty formal process to apply, so you have to have a lot of things that you already checked off in order for your application to be accepted, and of which that's something that Tim is monitoring. So long-term, I think as all of us get back into producing different TV, animated and video game and shows, I think it'd be great if there's an opportunity to expand the overall bill, for sure.
I'm glad you brought that up, Senator Boquist. That's always an issue. Every session that I've been involved with this tax credit is, you know, setting it at the right level, because the last thing we want to do is lose a good opportunity just because we ran out of money before they had a chance to apply.
And okay. Just to add, I think Courtney added her comments into the chat. I don't know if everybody could see that. I'm happy to read it out loud if you need that for the record.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it, so why don't you go ahead and do that?
Okay, so this is Courtney Williams. I believe there is a lot of room to expand. Expansion makes the state more competitive with other states. There are so many distribution channels online now, and they need content. Once more production opens up, it will be fast and furious to produce more.
Okay, that's good insight. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. I have John Powell signed up again. I don't know if that's a mistake or whether you're representing a different client. John, are you still there? Okay, we will chalk that up as a mistake. So that's all the witnesses we have signed up, and I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 43. And we'll open a public hearing now, and the witnesses are free to leave. They don't have to listen to the next bill. You lucky things. Senate, I will now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 141.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is Jamie McGovern from the Legislative Revenue Office. Senate Bill 141 adjusts statute for partial property tax exemption to disallow rounding in calculation of what is called the equalized floors in vertical housing developments. So these are housing developments that have multiple use and are more than one floor. So some non-residential and residential components. And it adjusts the calculation of percentage of property to be exempt from taxation to be the lesser of 20% times the number of floors, or 80%. And I'll just note that in the current statute, this is currently a schedule of amount of percentages that could be exempt. So 24%, 40%, 60%, 80%, it's bracketed up. And this is a simpler, more defined approach. So this just is 20% times the number of equalized floors or 80%. It doesn't have the multiple gradients. And it would just apply to property tax years after July 1st, 2021, and take effect on the 91st day after signing day.
Okay, we have Gwen Baldwin signed up. Gwen, are you with us? I'm not seeing Gwen. Did you see her in the waiting room?
I see her icon, if you will. She shows up on my screen as a G.
Somebody is waiting in the lobby. Oh.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. I'm getting a bit of, does this work?
We're getting an echo. Do we have a solution for that? I think you have two phones going, Gwen. Do you?
I have.
It looked like she was connected twice. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem. There's a 7663 and a 9517 that I'm seeing.
I'm trying to make sure you can hear me, and I'm not sure how to undo.
Would you? I think I can try to remove your video from the meeting. I don't want to kick her out if she's still trying to connect, though.
Well, she's on mute on both of her icons here.
That's what it looks like, yeah.
I'm not on mute on the phone.
There you go.
Okay, you're we're not hearing you now.
We hear you.
Gwen, why don't you sign off and sign on again with just one phone number? We've got two phone numbers for you signed up here.
Can't, if I sign on by video, it brings in the audio and my audio isn't working for some reason.
Well, right now we hear you perfectly. So go as fast as you can. No, we don't hear you now. Chris, would it make sense to have her hang up and just start over?
I would try that, yes.
Gwen, just hang up everything and start over, and we'll see if we can work this out.
Another option, Madam Chair, would be for us to call her from within this meeting.
Would be what? For us to call her?
Right.
Okay. I still see one number of hers still up on the screen. Is there somebody who can kick that number off?
We're trying to win. The 7663, I believe, is Senator Boquist.
Oh, that's Senator Boquist. We don't want to kick him off.
We just let Gwen in. Okay. So sometimes there's a lag. I think Dan Raposa from IT also just joined in case we have more difficulties.
Excellent. Our lifeline.
But I see Gwen on here and I see her on mute, so you might want to give her the okay to talk.
Okay, Gwen, let's try again. You can take yourself off of mute and start your testimony.
All right.
Okay. We're not hearing you.
Okay, it says my speaker and mic are unmuted. I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, now we can hear you.
We'll try this one more time. Hello, Chair Burdick and Vice Chair Boquist and members of the committee. I'm Gwen Baldwin. I'm here today representing Oregon Smart Growth.
Okay, you just cut off again. Gwen, you're gonna have to submit your testimony in writing, I'm afraid. Unless somebody can come up with a solution here.
Madam Chair, we could stand at ease for a minute and talk to Dan, see if he has any ideas.
Okay, we will stand at ease, Gwen, and see if our technical wizard can solve the problem here. But you still have the option to submit your testimony in writing.
Blue light is on, Madam Chair.
Blue light is on.
Okay, go ahead as if you were just starting, Gwen.
Thank you. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, and members of the committee, I'm Gwen Baldwin, here today representing Oregon's Smart Growth, a coalition of developers, investors, and allied professions committed to walkable, livable residential and employment development that is both feasible and sustainable. Oregon Smart Growth supports the modest but important adjustment to the tax abatement portion of this vertical housing development zone program that is in Senate Bill 141. The vertical housing development zone program is a state-created, local option, locally administered program that encourages increased housing creation with mixed-use development or redevelopment in specific, locally designated areas.
Since its inception, the program has been used to add up to 4 floors of housing above commercial space in locally created zones all over Oregon, from Grants Pass to LeGrand to the Dalles to Eugene to Hillsborough, Gresham, and Beaverton. My handout on OLIS covers the details of the program. Senate Bill 141 adjusts the abatement to remove the disincentive in the current statutes, which limit the abatement thresholds to a full equalized floor. So if a project calculated out to 3.75 floors, functionally 4, but 3.75 floors, only 60% abatement is given, as if there were only 3 floors, not nearly 80% for the nearly 4 full floors of the improvement. This discourages projects to fully develop housing in these zones or even participate in the program at all, as too risky or unpredictable. Senate Bill 141 revises state statutes to allow the abatement on improved land, on the improvement or the land, to reflect actual equalized floors of housing, full or partial, through a straight equalized floor calculation. So 3.75 floors of housing would get the 20% per floor abatement at 3.75 floors, not rounded down to 3. I urge your support of Senate Bill 141, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Gwen. This bill sounds familiar. We took up something, this bill or something like it before. Please refresh my memory.
Yes. So back in, I want to say 2017, the entire program was shifted from state administered to locally administered. It was always a local opt-in program, and it always was something that an individual city could choose, but it was the certification and final approvals of what that abatement was were at the state level. And so in 2017, the legislature simply changed that to be administered as well as opted in at the local level. So you have seen it recently in terms of the program side. This just touches the abatement side.
Yeah, I thought that we had taken up this issue of the partial floors before. Did we try that before? No, we haven't.
Not in my recollection. No.
Okay. Well. Okay. I'm clairvoyant, I guess.
You are.
Are there any other questions from the committee? Senator Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just need a little help. Clarity is. Does it require that the entire floor be low-income housing to receive the credit, or can a small percentage of it be low-income housing and receive the credit? So I guess I just don't understand.
Sure.
If the incentive is for low-income housing, what percentage has to be low-income housing of the improvements?
Chair Burdick, Senator Finley, thank you for the question. So this program has 2 different tracks of abatement. One is on the improvement itself, and the other is on the land. This is a housing density program. It's increasing housing. So think of a floor or two over a storefront on Main Street kind of thing. So it isn't specific to affordable. However, at the option of the builder, they can choose to add affordability, and it is by floor, and for each floor, you would get, under the current statute, you would get 20% abatement of the land. So you could do land and improvement if you had a mix of affordable and a mix of market. Under the current statute, you have to have a full floor. Under this, you could have half a floor of affordable and get partial abatement of that 20% of the land. Does that track?
Thank you. So when I read the background, it talks about the partial property tax exemption methodology seeks to capture the percentage of the structure that is utilized for low income housing. So that was the basis of my question. And so it appears that this is a desire to broaden that to all of the structure and not just the specific low-income housing. So thank you.
Chair Burdick, Senator Finley, the program is not an affordable housing program. The program is an increased housing program.
but a developer could choose to add affordability, and then they would get abatement of the land at certain percentages, as well as abatement on the improvement. So think of it as an opt-in project for affordability. It is not an affordable housing in its designation or creation. It has the option to add it.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions from the committee? All right, thank you, Gwen. Sorry about the technological problems.
My apologies. I will now blow up my computer.
That's right. I have several that went out windows, so I can understand.
Thank you for your patience.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye. Chris, do we have any bills to introduce? Oh, we don't even have a work session posted, so never mind. This completes our work committee, so we are adjourned.